What I want to do during this period for the rest of the retreat is take a look at the Maha Satipatthana Sutta, the greater discourse on the four establishments of mindfulness. There's actually two Satipatthana Suttas, the greater one, which is found in the Digha Nikaya as Sutta 22, and the middle length one in the Majjhima Nikaya, the middle length one, as Sutta 10. The only difference between the two is the greater one, which is longer. Greater doesn't mean better, just longer. Has a detailed explanation of the Four Noble Truths and the Eightfold Path, which is what I used for the talk on the first night after the full day. Maha means greater. Sati is the word we usually translate as mindfulness. Mindfulness is not a bad translation. It originally meant memory, to remember something. And sometimes in the suttas you find it used that way. We find mindfulness defined a lot of different ways in Western Buddhism. Sometimes you see bare attention, but that's not what it's about. It's really about remembering to be here now. Remembering to pay attention to what's present right here, right now. Anything else other than what's right here, right now, is either a memory or a fantasy. Okay? If you're paying attention to the grocery list for when you get home from the retreat, that's a fantasy, right? It's just something you're making up. Right here, right now, is all that we can actually pay attention to. Now, sometimes it's appropriate to pay attention to things other than right here, right now. I mean, it's necessary to plan. It's useful to learn from the past. But you should at least be mindful of the fact that you are planning or that you are attempting to learn from the past. So mindfulness on a retreat like this, where you don't really have to learn from the past and there is not any planning for you to do, would be paying attention to what's going on right now. And then patana. The old commentaries aren't quite sure what was meant. Foundations is a translation you often see, the four foundations of mindfulness. Probably the word is a shortened form of upatana, which would mean establishments. It's clear from the sutta that these are four things you should be mindful of, four things to pay attention to: the body, vedana, mind states, and phenomena. This sutta has an interesting history. There's a book that you can download from the internet as a PDF entitled A History of Mindfulness. It's by Ajahn Sujato, and it's quite interesting. It discusses the strategies that can be used to look at the suttas and determine which suttas are early material and which are later material. I say it's interesting. It's interesting if you're into the scholarly aspects of Buddhism. If you just want to do the practice, you probably find it pretty boring. But he takes as his prime example the Satipatthana Suttas. There are a number of versions of them. We have the Pali Canon, which was preserved in Sri Lanka. But these same discourses went to China. There was a different version of early Buddhism than the Theravadan, which we find in Sri Lanka. Actually, there were probably a number of different versions. One of the strongest and most widespread versions was the gone blank on the name. Well, let's say it'll come back to me at some point and I'll remember it. Was the group that was in Afghanistan. You might remember that the Taliban blew up a couple of very tall Buddha statues. These were carved by this group. They continued on around the western end of the Himalayas and came into China, bringing the scriptures with them, not in written form, not at least initially. They were memorized. And those were translated into Chinese and written down and preserved as the Chinese Agamas. In the Agamas, we find almost all of the suttas we find in the Pali Canon. They're arranged in a different order, but all the material pretty much is there. So we have a version, actually two versions in Chinese. We also find versions in Sanskrit that are preserved, and a version in Tibetan. Now, although it's the same sutta, it's different. In fact, this holds for a number of suttas. The differences sometimes are rather significant, and sometimes they're quite minor. You can tell it's the same sutta, but maybe it's said in a different place, or maybe the teaching is somewhat different, it diverges, or something like that. Oh, and the name of the group was the Savastivadins. That went to Afghanistan and later carried the suttas to China. So we have about a half a dozen different versions of the Satipatthana Sutta. The Theravadin version has 13 different practices that are given in it. What appears to be the original version only has 5 practices. It's most likely that, and again, I'm just guessing, I'm not a real scholar. I'm just sort of fumbling around looking at what the scholars say and trying to understand. But from what I can understand, it's most likely this sutta was composed in the area that now is Delhi, India, the western part of India at the time of the Buddha. It's quite likely that the Buddha actually never gave this discourse, that it was a compilation of teachings he gave at other times. In other words, what's in here is indeed the words of the Buddha, but not a discourse he gave at one specific time. The suttas were initially collected about 3 months after the Buddha's death. There was a council of arhats. 500 fully enlightened disciples of the Buddha came together outside the city of Rajagaha, and they put together the Vinaya, the rules for the monks and nuns, and the stories of how the rules came to be, and the suttas, or at least the suttas they had at that time. It appears that the sutta composition period didn't stop with the Buddha's death. Other people composed suttas, sometimes putting words in the Buddha's mouth, and sometimes like this, taking some of his teachings and putting them together. There was a second council about 100 years after the Buddha's death, and from what we can tell, they reorganized the suttas. We can find hints of an early organization in some of the later suttas. And then we have the organization we have today of the long, the middle, the connected, the numerical, and the miscellaneous collections. So it seems most likely that the Dharma spread to the area around Delhi, and somebody or a group of people took some of the teachings and composed the first version of the Satipatthana Sutta. and brought that to the Second Council. Scholars say 60 to 100 years after the Buddha's death. And so it got included in the reorganization. But it's such a brilliant teaching tool that other teachings of the Buddha were slowly added to it. In the Chinese version, you find slightly different teachings added in. In the Tibetan version, again, it's slightly different. But this version has come to be very important in Theravadan Buddhism and very important in Western Buddhism. As I say, I don't think the Buddha gave the discourse, but I do think he gave the teachings that we find in the discourse. So I think it's worth studying. And in particular, it's worth looking at the practices that are there and trying to do them. These are what we could say are the original insight practices. So, thus have I heard. All the suttas, or most of the suttas, start out like that because it was an oral tradition and it was recited. And so someone is saying, yeah, this is what I heard. Once the Lord was staying among the Kurus. There is a market town of theirs called Kamasadama. So the Kuru country is the land around Delhi. There the Lord addressed the monks. Monks, Lord, they replied. And the Lord said, there is, monks, this one going path that leads to the purification of beings, to the overcoming of sorrow and distress, to the disappearance of pain and sadness, to the gaining of the right path, to the realization of Nibbana. That is to say, the four establishments of mindfulness. So this phrase, the one going path, that's the literal translation. You see it translated many different ways. Here it says, there is this one way. Sometimes you see it translated, there is this one and only way. I think that's stretching things a bit. The phrase doesn't occur very often in the suttas, but in another sutta it occurs basically meaning this is a path that leads in one direction only. There are no branches off of it. It doesn't connect with any other paths. It leads directly to the goal of the path. So I think that's what's meant here. But it could also mean this is a path that's wide enough for only one person to walk on at a time. The suttas are full of puns. If you don't know Pali, then of course you don't know the puns. Unless the translator puts the material in the footnotes so that you can figure it out. And I suspect that what's here is a pun saying this is a path that leads in one direction only, and this is a path that's only wide enough for one person to walk at a time, meaning you've got to do the practice yourself. You can't hire somebody to meditate for you. It just doesn't work. And it leads to the purification of beings, to the overcoming of sorrow and distress, the disappearance of pain and sadness, to the gaining of the right path, to the realization of Nibbana. And it's the four establishments of mindfulness. What are the four? Here, one abides contemplating as body, ardent, clearly aware and mindful, having put aside hankering and fretting for the world. That's an interesting construction. One abides contemplating body as body. The scholars have any number of discussions of what that means. I think it means that one contemplates one's own body as just a body, as opposed to my body. It's a field of awareness. And so you contemplate your body as just a body. It also probably means you contemplate just the body, not what you think about the body or how you wish the body were or anything like that. It's just the body as it is. One does it ardent. So Yeah, you really got to work at this. You can't be sloppy. Clearly aware and mindful, having put aside hankering and fretting for the world. I don't know if you're familiar with those words. Hankering means wanting, and fretting means worrying about. So having put aside wanting things of the world or worrying about things of the world. So take a look at your body and don't worry about anything else. One abides contemplating Vedana as Vedana. One abides contemplating mind states as mind states. One abides contemplating phenomena as phenomena. Ardent, clearly aware and mindful, having put aside hankering and fretting for the world. So this is the introduction. And what follows are the practices of how you do these four categories of contemplation. Four, we could say, mindfulness meditations. And the first one is contemplation of body. And the first practice that's given is mindfulness of breathing. And how does one abide contemplating body as body? Here, having gone to the forest, to the root of a tree, or to an empty place, one sits down cross-legged, holds one's body erect, and establishes mindfulness before oneself. Okay, so you need to go to the forest, the root of a tree, or an empty place. This room qualifies as an empty place. What's meant is some place where there's not anything else going on. There's nobody selling anything here. Nobody's making lunch in here. It's a quiet place where you can meditate and not be disturbed. And then one sits down cross-legged. At the time of the Buddha, people sat cross-legged their whole lives. Unfortunately, in Western civilization, we invented these terrible devices known as chairs, which turn out to be actually quite bad for our bodies, and they destroy our ability to sit cross-legged, or at least seriously compromise it. Given that we don't have the capacity to sit cross-legged like the Buddha and his disciples did, it's perfectly okay to kneel on a bench or to sit in one of those chairs. Holds one's body erect. You want to be upright because being upright lets the energy flow more easily and helps keep you awake. And establishes mindfulness before oneself. Actually, what it says in the Pali is one establishes mindfulness at the mouth. But the word mouth can also be used as opening, like the mouth of a cave, right? So the opening of a cave. And there's a lot of discussion about exactly what it means. I think what it means is at the opening of the nostrils. Of course, if your nose is stopped up, then you can actually do mindfulness of breathing through your mouth. But the opening of the nostrils, I think, is what is meant here. And then the instructions. Mindfully one breathes in, mindfully one breathes out. Breathing in a long breath, one knows that one breathes in a long breath. And breathing out a long breath, one knows that one breathes out a long breath. Breathing in a short breath, one knows that one breathes in a short breath. And breathing out a short breath, one knows that one breathes out a short breath. So this long and short, I mentioned the first night as aids that you could use to help you with the mindfulness of breathing. You can pay attention to the lengths of the breaths and notice whether this in-breath is longer than average or shorter than average, and the same for the out-breaths. This is what's given in the suttas, and clearly it's a recommended aid. One trains oneself thinking, I will breathe in conscious of the whole body. One trains oneself thinking, I will breathe out conscious of the whole body. Now that sounds pretty simple, right? The whole body. Except there have been a huge number of interpretations. The commentaries, which were written about 800 years after the Buddha, say that the phrase whole body means whole body of breath, and that it means that you pay attention to the beginning of the in-breath, the middle, the end of the in-breath, the gap, the beginning of the out-breath, middle of the out-breath, end of the out-breath, the gap. All right, so you're really with the whole cycle. That is indeed a good thing to do, but I think it's stretching the Pali to try and make it mean that. Other teachers say that what you do is you breathe in and follow the breath into the body, and then breathe out, following the breath out. That's a useful insight technique, but it's not so good for concentration. It's too busy following the breath in and following it out. You really want to stay in one place and notice the breath at that one place. Another interpretation is that basically you're noticing the effect the breath is having on the body. It's not really clear from that why you would have this interpretation, but these instructions for mindfulness of breathing appear in many different suttas, and in particular they appear in the sutta on mindfulness of breathing, the Anapanasati Sutta, the in-breath, out-breath sutta. And there's enough context to give hints that perhaps this is what it means, that first you're paying attention to the breath and noticing the long breaths and the short breaths, and then you're paying attention and noticing the effect that the breathing is having on the body. Is it calming or is it agitating? And then the next one is, one trains oneself thinking, I will breathe in, calming the whole bodily process. One trains oneself thinking, I will breathe out, calming the whole bodily process. So basically, my understanding of what this is saying is pay attention to the length of the breaths. Notice what kind of breathing has what kind of effect on your body. And then intend to breathe in the way that produces calm in the body. Don't control the breath. Just intend. If you find the long breathing calms you down, intend for your breath to get long. And it probably will. This is the first four steps of 16 steps given in the Sutta on Mindfulness of Breathing. These first four steps can be used to generate access concentration. The middle eight steps of the Mindfulness of Breathing Sutta will take your concentration deeper. Some people try and interpret those middle eight steps to be the same as the jhanas. Well, maybe. I don't actually think that's the case. But definitely they're generating more concentration. And then the last four steps of the Sutta on Mindfulness of Breathing are clearly insight practice. So once again we find, get your mind concentrated and then gain insight into the nature of reality. But only the first four steps are given here. There's probably a good reason in that the 16 steps of mindfulness of breathing are divided into four parts, and the first part is said to correspond to the body. Well, that makes sense because the body's mentioned here, and since we're in mindfulness of the body, why not? This is not one of the original practices given in the sutta. This seems to have been added in fairly late. It shows up in the Chinese version, but in a different location. So, who knows? Maybe it was added to both versions independently, or added and then shuffled around. But what's interesting is we have a simile. Just as a skilled turner or his assistant in making a long turn knows that he is making a long turn, or in making a short turn knows that he's making a short turn. So too, in breathing in a long breath, one knows one's breathing in a long breath, etc. So this is like somebody working at a lathe, and they have their tool, and they're making a long turn, or they're making a short turn. Right? So as I mentioned earlier, you should pay attention to your breathing with the same degree of mindfulness that you have when you're working with power tools. Right? You really want to be in there very much fully present with what's going on, not goofing off and watching hockey on TV or something.